The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Or ray at rte.ie. Just for your information, they're telling me here the songs that make the most money at Christmas. The top five: Last Christmas by Wham, 300,000. White Christmas by Bing Crosby, 328,000. All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey, that gets 400,000 in royalties every year. Fairy Tale New York by The Pogues, Kirsty MacColl, 400,000. But the Christmas song that makes the most money every year is by Slade, 1 million, they reckoned. Merry Christmas, everybody. Now, every Friday, we invite somebody in to talk us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today is the turn of Kathleen Watkins. Good afternoon, Kathleen.
Good afternoon, Ray. Lovely to be here with you.
Now, there's your water.
Thank you.
And just to remind people that Happy Christmas, Piggeen is in bookshops now and written by yourself, illustrated beautifully by Margaret Ann Suggs. And it's a delightfully attractive Christmas book. And just give us a little bit of background to it.
Well, the background is the same really as the first book, Stories I Told to My Grandchildren. Now, there's a little addition in this one because the Lewis wasn't around when I started to tell the story, so I just put the Lewis in there. But it's just the kind of stuff that parents make up and grandparents make up for the kids. That's really it.
So it's Piggeen and his friend Badger.
Piggeen and Badger. Badger lives in Herbert Park, he's Dublin 4, and Piggeen lives beside the GAA grounds in Howth.
Right. And in this, their adventure centre around going into town before Christmas.
Big outing for Christmas, yeah. Yes. It's a tour really anybody could do. Even with the first book, they could do a tour. And some kids did. They went on the Dart. They went down the pier in Howth. They saw the seals in the harbour. They're there. They went to see Kevin in the fish shop. He's there. Yeah. The castle is there. So the lighthouse is there, the Bailey. And then all these places are there in this book.
So they could recreate Piggeen's and Badger's little adventures.
Yes, yeah. They could.
Speaking of your grandchildren, when we had you on the TV there recently, Sive played the harp with 50 other harpers, I'm told. Not harpists, harpers.
Yes.
And Keen was there. And Keen was your grandchild who you originally introduced Piggeen to.
Yes.
And when I asked him to describe you, he said,
Mad Granny.
Mad Granny.
Well, you see, only a mad granny would be encouraged to do the haka at 8:15 a.m. in London with a 4-year-old.
Right.
You know, he was hooked on the haka.
He was
into rugby from an early age, yeah. And he saw it on the telly, and he'd go around doing all this stuff. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Knowing darn well." He said, "I'm doing the haka. Would you like to?" So I found myself doing the haka
at 8:15 in the morning. He would do that. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
You know the idea. We've loads of clips here, and there are some wonderful clips that I'm dying to play for people at home. We've De Valera there from 1939, and we've a news bulletin about, well, actually King Edward himself after he abdicated, which he became Prince Edward. We'll get to all of those, but first to your life. So you were born to Thomas and Dinah.
Yes.
Back in
1934.
34, right. Okay, right. And go on.
And lived in my village of Sagard until I went away to school. And I went to my local national school, which was a very good national school. Our national schools are good. But at that time, my mother regularly would remind us how lucky we were. Our teachers had the Blake Premium. So we would mutter this to ourselves, don't forget, we have the Blake Premium.
What's the Blake Premium?
Well, you see, at that time, we didn't know. We thought it was something my mother made up.
Right.
You see, so every so often, down the years, I would say to somebody, did you ever hear of the Blake Premium? And they would say, no. So that was the end of it. Definitely, my mother must have made it up. Then a few years later again. So a few short years ago, my friend Anne Friel and I were having lunch. And in the middle of it, I suddenly thought of it again. And I said to Anne, I don't suppose you ever heard of the Blake Premium. And she said, I did, surely. And I thought, my goodness, what do you know about it? And she said, the writers, playwrights and wives, they had all visited St. Patrick's Training College in Drumcondra, and they opened out the papers of Brian Friel's father, who was a teacher also, as was Brian, and he had got the Blake Premium. Now, the only reason they could have got it was for very good primary cert results.
Uh-huh.
and certainly Mr. and Mrs. Monks took on no passengers.
So it was sort of like they incentivised primary school teachers to achieve.
Now, yeah. I don't know, did they get a little extra gift in the pay packet?
A bonus,
at the end of
yeah.
the year? I really don't know about that. But the honour and glory, my mother was hugely impressed and reminded us regularly about that. So
your
so
teachers have the Blake premium.
The Blake premium. And we used to look at each other and say, the Blake premium.
Very good. I'm sure there are people listening who will be able to shed more light on the Blake
they'd
premium.
They'd have to be as old as I.
51551. Yeah. How many children were in the family?
There were 7 of us. My parents lost 2 toddlers and a 12-year-old. And we never talked about the 2 toddlers. I suppose it must have been too painful. But I remember Paddy, he was 12, and he used to carry me around on his back on the floor, and I'm singing a little song. And but then the extraordinary thing is that the remaining 4 are still alive and well, today.
Right.
So my brother, Jim, is 87. And then there's me and then Claire and Phil. So it's an extraordinary thing, the way things happen. But my parents were terrific people. They never complained. They never showed. They just, I suppose, really, if any of us was a bit ill or had a problem, they would be extra concerned, maybe. But in fact, they got on with their lives, to be admired.
And what did they do?
Well, my father had land around the house on which he had cattle, and he rented other land. And he also had a quarry, which he later sold to Roadstone up near British, County Dublin. He had Leyland trucks on the road covering the roads of County Dublin. And that's what he did. And I remember joining him one day as he looked over a hedge. And he said, just nodded his head towards the cattle. He said, next year's fees. So, right. And that was true, next year's fees. And that's the way, I suppose, many people around the country educated their children. But at great loss to themselves, really, no holidays, no extras for themselves. They didn't go in for wining, dining or grand clothes or anything like that.
But, so you were, when World War II started, you were 5.
I remember them being very interested in everything happening on the radio because there was no television, and my father was interested in Hitler and everything that was going on, and my mother then was obsessed with, as were all her friends, I remember it so well, with Wallace Simpson, that the king was abdicating for a divorcee, an American divorcee. Yeah. They were fascinated by that because they only heard about that on the radio and the latest news from London, oh, yes, I remember it so well.
Kathleen, would you have gathered around the radio as a family?
Well, the radio was on a lot, but Dad would get a bit cross if we were making noise when he wanted to listen to something very important, so we knew to kind of hush down for that. Yeah. But we would hear the voice of John McCormack regularly, the beautiful voice of John McCormack, and the voice of Delia Murphy. She was huge, singing Three Lovely Lassies from Banyan and Roger Coming Home from the Wake in Kildare, all that kind of stuff.
We have, this is from the 3rd of September 1939, Eamon de Valera was Taoiseach at the time, and war had just broken out in Europe. And he came on to address the nation about what had happened.
And I was 5.
You were 5. Right. Let's have a listen.
I am speaking to you tonight because I thought you would expect me to. I have been too busy to prepare any connected manuscript, so I must speak to you from notes. I know you will understand. You know from the news bulletins to which you have been listening that the great European powers are again at war, that this would be the end has appeared almost inevitable for months past. Such an escape as we had a year ago could hardly be expected to occur twice. Yet, until a short time ago, there was hope. But now hope is gone, and the people of Europe are plunged once more into the misery and anguish of war.
That was very strong.
Oh, that's really dreadful. But do you know what strikes me, apart from delivering all that sad news? The beautiful pace of his voice. I mean, I really think that's something everybody should listen to again, because we all speak so fast. And that's beautiful pace. It's really impressive to hear that.
And although war had broken out, he explained himself to people.
Yes.
Excuse me, I'm not reading from a manuscript. I'm reading from notes.
Yes, yes. I've written it out myself.
Yes, which sort of, you know, it was very engaging. You were with them. You were with them on it, weren't you?
Yes, yes.
So that was 3rd of September 1939. Now, you mentioned King Edward and Mrs. Simpson already. That predated the Second World War, 1936. So we might as well, while we're playing clips, we might as well play this. So this is from the 11th of December, which is just around now, 1936. And, of course, he abdicated on the day, and then he addressed the nation. So he went from king to prince on the day.
Yes, yes.
So the first voice you'll hear is that of Director General of the BBC, Sir John Reith.
This is Windsor Castle, His Royal Highness Prince Edward.
At long last, I am able to say a few words of my own. But you must believe me when I tell you that I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king as I would wish to do without the help and support of the woman I love. And I want you to know that the decision I have made has been mine and mine alone.
Imagine his life. So he was brought up to be king, and he was king, and then he fell in love.
He fell in love, indeed, without the help and support of the woman I love. I mean, again, it's beautifully spoken, the pace is beautiful. I mean, it was just some electric moment.
Yes.
And my mother and her friends, they would have cups of tea and they would be talking about it, because they were all, nobody could believe that he was going to give up the throne. And he did, and away he went.
A true measure of his love for Mrs. Simpson.
I tell you, he had it bad.
There's a story about that clip, because you may have heard a banging sound after Sir John Reith finished.
Yes.
The story was that he had banged the door in disgust. You know, that he got up, left the studio, banged the door and left.
Maybe he did.
But he didn't. What actually happened was that when Prince Edward sat in to make his speech or whatever, he banged his foot off the table, off the leg.
That's what made the sound.
Right, so that was all from your early childhood. What were you like? What do you remember about yourself?
I just remember having an awful lot of fun as a child. We were always out of doors. We were never in the hedges and ditches, playing all around the fields. And I remember the garden. I remember a row of buddleia trees and the beautiful purple, long purple flowers, and lots of red admirals, butterflies all over. They seemed attracted to that. That's one memory.
Yeah.
I remember my first communion day, my confirmation day, very much simple family days, no big whining and dining like everybody does nowadays.
The big parties,
none of that.
So you didn't have a Hummer? No, I'm joking.
We had a very nice family day at home. That was it. It was like birthdays as well. You knew it was your special day, but there was no mountain of presents. You weren't having a big birthday party with people coming with a whole pile of parcels. Children get far too much nowadays.
What was your dad like in particular? Because a lot is made of fathers from a different age and what was expected of them and what they delivered.
He was smiling at the breakfast table. He was always good humoured. He was funny. He was huge into politics. He had been in prison. He had been a hunger striker in his day in 1922. And so he had a lot of political friends. And he had an interesting group of friends with whom he would have a regular drink. People like John McCann, the playwright, Donal's father, Mick McNamara, who's head of the School of Music. I remember on one occasion, he said to my father, there's this wonderful little girl playing the fiddle the violin, and you must come in and hear her. So my father went into the School of Music, and there was this little girl, and she played, and my father was, who was full of music himself, though he'd never played an instrument, and he was just bowled over, and he came over and he said, and her name was Geraldine O'Grady.
Oh, right.
So it was the beginning of
Geraldine O'Grady's career. Yeah. And what about your, the beginning of your career as a musician?
Well, my first introduction to music was in my national school. And I have a thing about music for children. The younger they can get it into their lives, the better. And we started to learn Moore's melodies in the national school. And the day we put them together in harmony, I remember that moment. And it was really magic. And I knew this is what I love. This is a wonderful thing, this music thing. And then I went to Sign Hill and I was there for 5 years, so we were immersed in a bit of everything. And I did the piano and the cello and the harp. Now, the piano and cello I did with music. The harp, there was no music. So it was makey-uppy. And we were learning dozens of Irish songs for which there were no accompaniments. So I made them up.
Now, so you had to play by ear?
I played by ear, yeah. I could also play the piano by ear, which makes you a bit lazy sometimes, because the teacher would say, that's a lovely chord, but it's not the one that's written.
You know? Down, yes,
But anyway, I actually was talking the other day to Sister Bernadette in Crumlin, and she's huge into music in St. Agnes's in Crumlin, and I know she won't mind me talking about her school, the children there, excuse me. Everybody in the National School in St. Agnes's learns an instrument. And it would be wonderful if that happened in national schools.
Yeah, all over the country, yes.
I think there's a little bit of it happening.
What's the name of the nun?
Sister Bernadette. I mean, if Sister Bernadette said you'd be starting the harp tomorrow, Ray, I'll meet you at 2 o'clock. You would be there to start your harp. But it's a wonderful thing. What it has done for the children in Crumlin, that all their... It hasn't interfered with their lessons at all. It's enhanced everything. Everything has improved. Their confidence has improved. Their lessons have improved. They're just thriving on it. They love it. And some of the parents are now learning as well. That's all happened in one area because of the work
the
of
driving force,
Sister Bernadette and her friends.
Thomas Moore, you mentioned.
Yes.
We have Let Aaron Remember.
Let Aaron remember the days of old, ere her faithless sons betrayed her, when Malachy wore the collar of gold, which he won from her proud invader, when her kings with...
That's Richie Hayes singing...
I don't know that version.
Do you not?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
No, but that would be, what we would say, one of the well-known Moore's melodies. I mean, there are over 70 of them. So when I went to Sign Hill then, one of our nuns wrote a play, a musical play, based on Moore's melodies. And we learned to play the harp for that. And we did duets and trios. In fact, on one occasion, we did a wonderful quartet. And there's so many unusual songs. Oft in the Stilly Night, Strike the Gay Harp, Farewell, But Whenever You Welcome the Hour. Oh, beautiful, beautiful songs, beautiful music.
So you were a teenager into your 20s in the early 50s. What was Dublin like then? What do you remember of it?
Well, my Dublin then was totally immersed in music because I was, once I left school, I was dabbling at the harp, going here and there. And I used to go to the Royal Irish Academy of Music on a Saturday afternoon where Sean O'Gothuama from Cork, who was a mathematician, that's how he earned his living, he collected Irish music and he taught Irish songs every Saturday from 3 to 6. And his sister-in-law, Roginie Hay, whose sister had taught us the harp in Sign Hill, she played the harp or the piano. And there was no music written, so he would la-la the air.
Right.
And we would la-la back. And then he would give us sheets with the words written on them. Now, in years after that, the Educational Company of Ireland published them in little books. And I still have bits of
it. It sounds idyllic. We had Robbie Henshaw, who's an international rugby player, on recently with his family. They all play traditional Irish music. But he learned how to play the accordion by his granddad whistling in his ear. That's how they learned.
Really?
Yeah. So he'd whistle it and they'd repeat it on the...
But that's wonderful. You see, any introduction to music, to give children music, I mean, everybody isn't going to be the professional performer, but they can be an educated audience.
Mm.
And I would love to see more children doing music. Now, Koltes Kultori do fantastic work. You see children playing flutes, playing violins, fiddles, as they call them, and squeeze boxes. It's fantastic. Mm. And doing trad dancing. But there are still children who don't have the opportunity. And there would be people out there who haven't had a chance, you know.
You have an interest in sound. You trained in balance and control.
I did.
Tell us about balance and control.
Yeah, I there were two girls who were doing B&C, as they called it, in old Radio Henry Street. And I used to see these girls putting out the microphone. I thought, that looks nice. I think I'd like to do that. So then somebody said, there was a course coming up, so you had to apply. So I was in and I did the course, and it was really a lot of fun. The male and female group, and we learned...
So you're a sound engineer.
To become a sound engineer. Yeah. And now they call them sound engineers, yes. Sound operator.
Yeah.
But in fact, I wanted to put the orchestra out in the air, because when you listen sometimes, you think, the orchestra's drowning out the soloists there, or whatever, you know. I still have the interest in sound.
Right, okay.
So anyway, when I was about to take up full-time, I was doing part-time. I used to gallop up from the Irish Dunlop Company, where I was banging on a typewriter, and into our radio air in Henry Street, and put on the records for Liam Devalley for hospital's requests.
Yeah.
And Liam later left RT and became a judge. But anyway, he was a very nice guy, and I used to put on his records. But then the ad came in the paper for television. I thought, I think I'll try that. So
Do you know what I love about this, Kathleen? Because we have had that conversation from there on. So we've filled in your early years, so to speak.
My early years.
Do you know what we have here? We couldn't find Mr. Devalley in the archives, but we have a clip of Terry Wogan, who came back in 1986 as a guest presenter of hospital requests.
Really?
Yeah, he had done it 20 years previously.
I never put records down for Terry.
Did you not? No, let's have a listen.
Radio Erin. From now until 1 o'clock, it's hospital's requests. And to present the programme, we welcome back Terry Wogan.
Ah, the silvery tones of Andy O'Mahony. Andy and I joined as boy announcers together, you know, in about 1833. And we used to take long walks between the programmes because we couldn't afford to go into the pub. And he used to tell me what was wrong with my broadcasting, and I used to tell him, and we both used to wonder whether we'd done the right thing in leaving the bank. I still do. I'm delighted to be doing this programme, though it's a great treat to be. Hospital's requests, what memories it holds for me. It's the reason I joined broadcasting, you know, is to do hospital's requests. The only programme in which you could ad-lib and have a bit of spontaneous fun. And it's great to have your letters and your cards. Terrific. And indeed, it's the same people who are writing as were writing to me 20 years ago. And the same records as well. You'd be pleased and thrilled skinny to know.
The late Terry Wogan.
That's lovely.
Isn't
That's
it lovely?
Really lovely hear that.
Yeah. From 1986. And Liam Devalley was the man that you used to put records on for. Kathleen has a beautiful voice. I'd love to hear her read an audiobook. Well, you did an audio CD.
I did an audio for the first one.
Yes, yeah.
But I didn't do this one.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Lovely to hear Kathleen Watkins on your show. I have lovely memories of meeting her when she worked on the 50th anniversary video for the School of Culinary Arts, DIT, in Colbrough Street. She was amazed at the different classes being taught, and especially the display of pastry work, including wedding cakes and sugar pieces made by staff and students. Hope she remembers this. That's John.
Oh, I remember it fondly.
Yeah.
We did a beautiful programme there. I mean, it was like another university, Colbrough Street. It's just a fantastic place. And I remember also some young people, teenagers from St. Michael's House were there, and they were learning to cook, and they were really brilliant at it.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
I think we've got to the bottom of the Blake Premium.
Oh, good.
My uncle was granted the Carlisle and Blake Premium for excellence in teaching way back in 1930, says Breeden Waterford. And my old primary teacher won the Carlisle and Blake. So it's Carlisle and Blake Award in 1950s for exceptional teaching standards. It was a carryover from pre-independence days and much valued in primary teaching, says Eamon. And here's the thing, A.R. Blake was a man who had served on the Education Commission. That's he gave his name to that.
That's terrific to know that. After all these years.
So the Caroline and Blake is the thing. That's the official name. And A.R. Blake was the Blake side of it. So we'll have to find out about Caroline now.
Okay.
Happy Christmas, Piggeen is in bookshops, and it's a beautiful book, as I say, illustrated by Margaret Ann Soggs and written by Kathleen Watkins. Kathleen, thanks so much for coming in.
And thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Yeah.
And can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Since Gay way back got his diagnosis, we've had cards, letters, notes, mass cards, everything from all over the country. People put pen to paper. There's something so special about the written word on torn off jotters, on all kinds of things, anything they could find. Everything has been so much appreciated. So thank you very much to everybody.
How is he? I saw his picture today. He looks
not too bad at all today. Now we're actually going in to have a little Christmas drink with the Tyrone Productions people. So,
and he's going into it.
He's coming as well.
Brilliant,
yes,
brilliant.
Yes.
Well, pass on our best wishes,
I
hope you and Gay and all the family have a wonderful Christmas.
And may I wish you the same.
Thanks,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.